A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
in time
concentrate on
space.
Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 290. This time we are continuing our discussion about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So we are talking about a 90-minute television film that broadcast in 2003. It features John Hannah in the dual role, possibly, as both Jekyll and Hyde.
Yes, that's right. And it is the closest version we've found so far on British TV of Robert Louis Stevenson's book, although we'll talk about some of the differences in a moment when we get to them. But yeah, it's we were looking for a classic Victorian adaptation, and we sort of found one.
Yes, that's right.
So continuing our discussion from last time of the plot of this TV adaptation, there are some nice similarities to the original novella. In particular, you may recall that Edward Hyde commits two particularly shocking crimes, and they are portrayed here. So infamously, there's the casual running down of a young child when Hyde sort of runs down a small girl without taking any notice of her. And of course, this erupts and causes outrage in the local crowd.
Yes, that was in a carriage of some kind, I think he runs her over.
Yep. And of course, we perhaps should mention, although it is slight spoiler, that there will be, from the original story, the savage murder of the MP, Sir Danvers Carew, played by the great David Warner. And again, as I say, they're both sort of here in this version, and pretty grim they are, I guess, Brian.
Yes, there is definitely some quite gruesome and violent stuff in this show. But we also have the loss of control that Henry Jekyll experiences, sort of fading into the Edward Hyde personality. And as we mentioned in our previous episode, there is no change in appearance between Jekyll and Hyde in this version, and everyone recognizes the Hyde persona, we're calling him, as Dr. Jekyll whenever they see him. And we get these conversations between Jekyll and Hyde, which are like hallucinations where, you know, every mirror suddenly he's talking to this other aspect of himself.
Yes, and of course it does beg the question for this version, is it really a different person, or is it just Dr. Jekyll succumbing to his own drug and facing the terrors of drug addiction and what happens to him there? But as you say, Brian, we do get these sort of split-screen encounters. We get the mirror encounters where the Hyde persona is speaking back to him. And of course, it's all sort of escalating and accelerating towards the end of the story, which we've seen in a way at the beginning, because we know that Dr. Jekyll is going to end up dying in his laboratory as the lawyer Utterson and the staff of the house break in to try and find out what's happened to Dr. Jekyll.
Yes, that's right, of course.
And along the way, we should mention that there is brief nudity, a fair bit of violence, and one particularly disturbing rape sequence which may upset or even trigger some viewers, so we have to warn you about that. Edward Hyde is an unpleasant character indeed in this version, which I suppose, you know, does hark back to the original, but there you go, we need to mention that stuff for you.
Yes, the violence and the depiction of that rape sequence is intense, and it's something that you should be aware of. If that's something that is difficult for you to watch, this is maybe a show that you should avoid.
So we've been talking about Robert Louis Stevenson's original novella, Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This particular version, obviously, you know, as I say, 2003, but there's been others along the way, Brian.
There have been a lot of adaptations of this. The first version that was done on stage was done in Boston in May of 1887, just 16 months after the publication of the original novella. So it was interesting to see things move quite so quickly to being adapted. And in that case, on stage, Thomas Russell Sullivan adapted it, and Richard Manning was known for playing both roles, and he continued playing both roles pretty much right until he died in 1907. So 20 years from the 19th and 20th century, we had one actor doing this on stage a lot.
And isn't it fascinating that just, as you say, just 16 months after the story's published, we get the one actor playing both roles, and there it is, almost set in stone from then on, Brian. Something we've talked about before, and we'll come back to in a moment, but this idea that it is a dual role played by the one actor.
Yeah, and some classic stories take many years before they capture the imagination of the public. That was not the case here. Within a couple of years, it was something that was being adapted and put on stage on sort of an ongoing basis. They kept doing it with Sullivan in the role.
Yeah, absolutely intriguing. We know the first film version was as early as 1908, which again, I think, was based on that stage play by Thomas Russell Sullivan. Of course, that doesn't survive in the archive, sadly. But a more famous version, the 1920 John Barrymore version, which does survive and is in the public domain, so you can watch that. And there's been many, I suppose, famous film actors who've tried it over the years. Michael Caine, Spencer Tracy. Again, you know, this idea that the one actor plays both roles and that along the way there'll be some form of transformation or transfiguration scene. And of course, we've covered Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in some way because there's been at least two versions on British television where various creators have sort of modernized the story to a certain extent. So famously, Stephen Moffat in 2007 did a version called Jekyll, which we enjoyed tremendously back in British Invaders episodes 18 and 19. Back right in the early days of the show, Brian.
Yes, quite a number of years ago now. And more recently, Charlie Higson's Jekyll and Hyde was broadcast in 2015. And that we covered in British Invaders 264 and 265. In both of those, they featured a descendant of Dr. Jekyll inheriting the problem, shall we say, inheriting this condition of turning into Hyde. And in both cases, they went with this idea of having one actor who sort of changes appearance in a way. They did that with James Nesbitt in 2007 and Tom Bateman in 2015.
Now, of course, we were looking for, after, you know, considering those modernizations of the Jekyll and Hyde legend or story, we were looking for slightly more faithful adaptation of the Victorian classic, something to match up with particularly the 1960s Mystery and Imagination TV series, where we found versions of both Frankenstein and Dracula, interesting, creepy black and white versions, great central performances by Ian Holm and by Denham Elliott. This, you know, it doesn't have that black and white intensity. It's a very colourful production in a way, particularly when Edward Hyde adopts his purple coat. And as we say, there's a fair bit of blood around as well. So whether or not this fits the bill, well, we'll get to that in just a moment. But it's certainly, you know, the closest we've found, I guess, to the curiously titled Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. As you pointed out last time, Brian, it doesn't have the on the start of it, does it?
Yes, that's right. There's no article in the title, which is slightly odd. Yeah, this comes out of a very different era from the 1960s Mystery and Imagination series, which was really about doing very close adaptations to the source material. So I think we should get into some of our own thoughts about this particular adaptation of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So, Eamon, what did you like about this particular show?
So I really liked the bits where it's faithful to the novella. I like the fact that it starts with them breaking into the laboratory with Utterson, the lawyer, being a sort of central figure who, you know, listeners will probably remember. He is the one who is trying to crack the strange case in the original novella. So I like the way they did that. And of course, using those two famous or infamous crimes that Edward Hyde commits in the book. So the moments where it's very faithful, I really enjoyed those. You know, we'll perhaps talk in a moment about when it starts to veer off the original, how well it succeeds. But what about yourself, Brian? What did you like about this production?
I agree some of those moments were pretty good. I liked the look of this. They did a nice job of bringing Victorian London into this form that was not drawing attention to itself. It felt right and it looked good, but it wasn't like some things where there's a lot of sort of, you know, almost tourism of, you know, celebrating this amazing setting they have. It was more in the background than that, but it was done pretty well. So that was something I liked.
Yeah, it does look good. You know, Vilnius does a fantastic job standing in for Victorian London. And as you say, we've got the fog, we've got dark alleyways, we've got figures rushing away into the darkness. We've got some great clothing and costumes of the period and cobbled streets and so on. So yes, the look of it, the production work, the design work, the costumes, I think are great. I did quite enjoy it when you know, Edward Hyde, as I say, dons his somewhat flamboyant outfits as opposed to the rather more sort of sedate and traditional garb that Dr. Jekyll wears.
Yes, that's right. David Warner, I thought, was very good in this. I always enjoy a performance from him, and certainly did here.
Yes, I mean, it's amazing how some actors are just compelling and fascinating to watch, and David Warner clearly one of those. In a way, he reminds me a little bit, you know, in a similar fashion of the late John Hurt, who, you know, we've talked about a couple of times, who always, when he's on screen, you just compelled to watch their performances. And David Warner as Danvers Carew is great. In fact, I could have done with a bit more of him, really.
What did you think of the other performances in this?
I think they're all fine. I mean, I don't think there's any sort of, you know, standout performances for the wrong reasons. Of course, we have to talk about John Hannah doing the two roles. And it's an interesting choice that they decided not to change his appearance in any way. And of course, this does allow for some, I suppose, some more sort of suspense when characters think they're talking to Dr. Jekyll, but it's actually Edward Hyde. And this allows him to get away with certain things that Jekyll clearly couldn't do. Although some of those things, as we've said, are very unpleasant and possibly triggering. So, you know, be careful. But yeah, it's an interesting decision. Regular listeners will know that when we've done our various versions of Jekyll and Hyde, I have pondered the difference from the book to the screen. Because as you will remember, Brian, in the original book, the great mystery, of course, is who is Edward Hyde? And Robert Louis Stevenson is able to pull off the great reveal at the end when it's revealed that it's actually when it's actually Dr. Jekyll all along. But of course, as soon as you put it on stage or on screen and you have the one actor, it becomes changed, I suppose, because we can see what's going on. We can see it's the same actor.
Yeah, and of course it's something that is so well known at this point that the idea of it being a surprise that they're the same person is not something that you're going to see. But in this one, they had the very odd idea that there was effectively no transformation at all. The only transformation was that when Jekyll injects himself with a drug, his behavior becomes wild and uncontrolled and very violent. And that feels to me, it makes it into a different story that, you know, there is no transformation. There is no sense that Edward Hyde is like a different character that that Jekyll transforms into. It's just like a mood altering or persona changing thing. And the only reason the name Hyde is in this at all is as a sort of smokescreen. There is supposedly this patient that we know has already died, but that Jekyll is blaming things on.
Yes, as you say, an interesting choice to show him injecting a mood altering drug and then basically descending into the spiral of drug addiction and paranoia and increasing desperation as he can't control the Edward Hyde persona. And there's a sort of battle of wills between the two aspects which we see portrayed on screen. I mean, that was interesting in a way because we don't see that in other versions. Or at least I can't recall seeing this other aspect where he looks into a mirror and sees the differently clad and differently behaving Edward Hyde. And of course, the sort of hallucination scene where they're both on screen at the same time. But yeah, interesting stuff.
I think the best moments of the performance and the best moments from John Hannah were when they did those encounters between the two of them with the sort of hallucinations or dreamlike sequences. Those were sort of the highlights of this. So that was nice to see. And I think that was a nice choice. Disposing of the idea of a transformation and someone who isn't recognizable as Jekyll still seems rather odd to me.
Now, the other thing, of course, is that the various versions we've looked at before, and it's become a bit of a trope, I suppose, not only on screen, but also in comics. I'm thinking of Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill's League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. But this idea that the Edward Hyde character has some form of superpowers, or at least enhanced abilities. He's stronger and faster within, more highly attuned senses and so on. We saw James Nesbitt do that in Jekyll, and of course Tom Bateman, whose appearance doesn't change greatly when he's, the Hyde aspect takes over, but he becomes stronger and sexier and slightly wilder looking when he does so. But of course here there's no superpowers for Edward Hyde. He's just an out and out Victorian villain.
Yeah, and that I think was a nice way of doing it, and I guess it separates the original novella from the sort of mythos that's built up with the different film adaptations that have been done and so on. There is a mythos of Jekyll and Hyde, which is somewhat different from the original novella. It doesn't stray as far from the source material as the Frankenstein mythos does at this point, but there is a difference there.
Yeah, I mean, I it's a fascinating point, Brian, the way that these stories captured the public imagination, and then, as you say, this mythos springs up where it actually changes from the source material. And as you say, perhaps over the years, what we recall of Frankenstein owes more to Boris Karloff than it does to Mary Shelley. And this strange idea about Edward Hyde, and how absolutely, devastatingly interesting I find it that 16 months after the novella is published, there he is on stage in Boston with one actor doing the two roles. Obviously, theatre producer and writer seeing the opportunity to do this sort of interesting dualism that becomes enshrined over the years on screen and stage.
And it crossing the pond so quickly at that point in time is quite something as well.
Yeah, I mean, we forget how much the Victorians loved serialized fiction or what would you call it? Sort of exotic and strange fiction, how it captivated the public imagination in the way that perhaps books and comics can't quite these days because of so many other competitors.
In a way, that's true, yeah.
So I suppose we've mentioned some highlights. I guess we get to lowlights from this production. It does seem... it's about 90 minutes long, and it's all right to watch, but in places it's rather sort of plods along, I found, Brian. What about yourself?
Yeah, I usually enjoy things with slower pacing, but this did feel a bit dull, and in part that I think was due to the performances being reasonable and okay, but apart from David Warner, none of them jumped out and had me captivated. The captivating parts of it were things like those split-screen dual-role moments. Those were great, but we didn't get them until pretty late in the show. And I really did feel that we lost something in the way that they handled the transformation.
Yes. As you mentioned, David Warner, I'm somehow reminded of one of the Amicus portmanteau horror films that he was in sometime in the late 60s or early 70s. And I can't remember which film it was, but he is possessed by an evil mirror and undergoes a sort of transformation, if I recall correctly. And how fascinating it would have been to see David Warner do Jekyll and Hyde, perhaps. Could we have that version from an alternate timeline, perhaps?
That could have been interesting at one time, for sure.
So, yes, it's perhaps not the most memorable. You know, it's closer to the original, which is what we were looking for, but it's not an entirely memorable production. It sort of passes the time okay, but it doesn't really sort of stick with you afterwards, I found, Brian.
Okay, so I think we should get into our recommendations here. I think it's time. So I can start this one. I can't really recommend this. The lack of a transformation from Jekyll to Hyde in any real way sort of saps the spirit of the idea and the story. The performances were okay, but the whole thing is a little bit dull and it feels a little bit unnecessary. So I'm not going to give a recommendation here.
Okay. Listeners will know I like to put things in rankings, so I'm going to say that the Stephen Moffat and James Nesbitt Jekyll is at number one, the Tom Bateman, Charlie Higson, Jekyll and Hyde is at number two, and this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is at number three in my ranking at the moment. Like yourself, I can't really recommend it. It's one for completists, perhaps a brave effort, but didn't quite work out. We're still looking for perhaps the perfect version. Maybe we won't find one. It just doesn't exist, Brian.
Yes, well, it may not exist on British television at any rate. If you know of a different one we should be looking at, please let us know. Just in passing, I'll mention that Big Finish is planning to release an audio version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And as of now, there isn't a date on that, but it is available for pre-order. So hopefully we will get something interesting there.
Okay, I'll look out for that, and I'll look out for the infamous Lost Unbound Universe version where David Warner plays the two roles.
Ah, yes. So, in summary, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde gives us the classic Victorian story of the scientist Dr. Jekyll developing this mind-altering potion that transforms, in this case, just his persona to something much darker, going by the name Edward Hyde, and that results in all sorts of very unpleasant things moving towards this fairly intense conclusion that will not end well for Dr. Henry Jekyll.
And if you've watched this version and have your own views, please drop by the Facebook group and let us know.
Oh yeah, please do.
And please, of course, come back next time. We're looking at a very modern production, the sort of antithesis of a Victorian drama. We are doing the dark and violent conspiracy theories of Channel 4's Utopia.
Yes, that definitely has a different and very modern and quite violent feel to it. So it will be an interesting one to talk about, for sure. So until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. All of our past discussions are there. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there, and we have some great discussions going on, so feel free to jump in and join in the fun.
Or visit vognetwork.com and search for British Invaders, where you'll find us as part of the Voice of Geeks Network, along with a stable of other interesting shows that may pique your attention. Come and join us at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. We have broadcasts on their audio stream on Mondays and Tuesdays. So thank you for listening. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us. And until next time, it's Eamon in England saying, keep taking the potions.